Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
And I remember leaving and just crying, kind of suddenly realizing that my version of a ministry, and none of these people were buying it because it was clear from their perspective that I was just full of myself and they couldn't see Jesus.
Everybody has a story, and every one is a chapter. A piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I are
a part of it.
We are not.
We're not the hero.
This.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When David Bush was in college, he already had his career path charted. He was a talented singer and songwriter, and he was sure that his star was about to rise. It turned out God was more interested in David's heart than his chart-topping success, and he was about to lead him on a journey that looked nothing like what he had planned, but would bring more fulfillment than any number one record ever could. This is chapter 40 of Epic, David Bush's story.
I was writing mostly secular music at the time and had an opportunity because of a relationship with a fantastic musician who produced and played with a lot of the early Christian bands out of Southern California, Maranatha Music. And so when I wanted to do a concert and put a band together, as long as I had him playing keyboards, pretty soon I found out that I had a really good band put together because they wanted to play with him, and I'm playing with kind of a who's who of studio musicians. So anyway, I put together a concert opportunity at the junior college that I was at, kind of thought what a great witness this would be if at the end of the concert, you know, I'd do the Christian song and give a little testimony and kind of sanitize it and sanctify the whole thing. The concert went off, I thought, really well, and they got some really great photos with all the fog, and it was pretty well attended, and the posters looked great, and they were scattered all over town. And, you know, this was a big leg up for David Bush. And went into the office of the professor, who I was in a class of his of stage design and production. So I told them during the class, you guys, you know, you have an excellent opportunity this semester, because guess what? I'm going to be given this concert, and you guys can help do the lights and the sound and all that. And on the front side, that was a pretty good opportunity. They're going to have to do a real show with real people who are really good, and this can be a great experience they wouldn't have got. But what he told me as I went in there, kind of for the, you know, referendum on how the concert went, and, you know, feel him out for what he thought about it, he said something I've never forgotten, and is what he told me, was, well, you know, at the end of this thing, we all really felt kind of used. And I just kind of got pasty mouth, and I must have looked, you know, like, well, what do you mean? And he said, these people poured hours into this and, you know, never really got a thank you, never really got acknowledged from the stage. Everybody just kind of felt used. I'm sure it was a great night for you. And I remember leaving his office and walking out into an open area and around a pillar where nobody could see me and just crying and kind of suddenly realizing that my version of a ministry, you know, sanitizing a concert with one little gospel song at the end that I thought was really going to drive home a testimony from my life, and none of these people were buying it because it was clear from their perspective that I was just full of myself and they couldn't see Jesus, and it wasn't just because of all the fog on the stage. They couldn't see Jesus because I was filling up the room with me. And, you know, I'd like to say that I learned that lesson and never made a mistake again and became this incredibly selfless, you know, instantly humble. Transformed, humble artist. But, you know, sanctification doesn't work that way, at least it hasn't for me. Two steps forward and one step back. Found myself after college getting recruited onto the staff of Campus Crusade for Christ Music Ministry, and actually it was because of concerts like the one I just described, where their head music person for the ministry nationally was at one or two of those, and he told me to leave college, at, you know, in junior college, and you don't need a degree, just come, we got this band here and there, you're going to be the lead singer and this and that. So, and my parents said, no, you're going to finish college, and then you can run off and join the circus. But so I finished college, but I already knew what I was going to do, and I was going to be the lead singer for a band in Indianapolis, Indiana, and they toured all over the world, and, you know, wouldn't that be a great ministry? And it would be, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I raised my support in record time. My dad was a pastor. We had an affluent church in Southern California. And before you know it, I was on staff. And once again, I wasn't really ready.
And spiritually? Maturity?
Oh, no, I knew. I had the experience musically, and I knew a lot about the Bible, and I was a follower of Christ. But there was still, I think, probably a chip on my shoulder, or there was just a lot of refining if I really wanted to be used that was going to have to happen. And God put me in a waiting room for 2 years where I relearned how to hold a mic and relearned how to sing by taking voice lessons.
What was the impetus for that? How did
how everybody got treated if you went into the music ministry.
Oh.
Now, everybody who went to the music ministry hadn't already recorded, you know, lots of equipment, demo tapes with, at that time, Debbie Boone's band was my backup band for demo tapes.
Oh, my goodness.
And had stuff sitting on the desk of Capitol Records wondering if Air Supply was going to record my song.
And so,
you know, heady stuff for, you know,
a young
guy.
Man. Yeah.
And so I'm going to go, and they want me, and I'm going to go and turn this thing up a notch or two.
Right.
You know?
And that's not what happened.
No, it isn't. Doggone it. God didn't care about single was sitting
at
Capitol Records desk, and he didn't care about how many demos I'd made or how big the budgets were, and I was crushed that he didn't, because I thought that he probably should. So I spent a couple of years, frankly, learning how to have a really good quiet time, a really good devotional time, learning what it meant to spend a whole day in prayer, learning what it meant to share my faith in a relational way, skills that are valuable for anybody and certainly would be valuable for me in the future that I couldn't see or know at that time. But it was another kind of self-eviscerating, peeling off all of the me that was still too prominent that he really couldn't use. That kind of brought, at the end of that time, they really didn't know what to do with me. And it seemed like my time there had kind of run its course. One of the interesting notes about, what were you doing in that time? This just doesn't make sense. What a sorry waste of human potential, you know, and all for the kingdom's sake, too. Don't you know what you're missing? Just before I left staff, I went on a final tour. It was a second tour of Japan with a band, and ended up meeting my wife, some gal from Iowa, who was on a missions project, who wanted to go to Russia, but her parents said, no, you're not going to the Iron Curtain project. So her second choice was Japan, and she showed up a week or two after I got there, and this waste of my time, because I already knew I was leaving staff, and just kind of painting by numbers, going through the motions, phoning it in to a certain degree before I moved on and did, you know, got on with God's will for my life. In walks in this gal from Iowa on this last end of a 2-year gauntlet of questions about, why am I here? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. This is a waste. What God does when he's wasting your time. It's an interesting thing, and if that was paying a price, it was well worth it. But anyway, at the very last month of my time with that ministry, I got introduced to who would become my wife.
Wow.
And so I spent a couple of years doing a lot of soul searching, but as I look back in those 2 years of time that were very difficult for me emotionally and in my pride and other things, I met Fernando Ortega, who was a staff member with me and was asking some of the same questions. And because he didn't write any music, he played my music. And I met my wife. And I learned how to have a quiet time, and I learned how to have a prayer life, and I learned that being involved in gospel music and Christian music wasn't all glitz and glitter, that it meant hauling equipment and setting stuff up and tearing it all down and, mm-hmm. and rolling the cords right and putting it on the truck. And
not so glamorous.
Not so glamorous. And those are important lessons. And they were hard lessons for me to learn because I was ready to have a different kind of experience.
Yeah.
But God had something else in mind for me that was very different and ended up bringing some lifelong critical opportunities, not the least of which is capped off by meeting my wife of 31 years.
So where did you go from there then once you left Crusade?
Well, I thought that music was over.
Okay.
God had had 2 years of full-time music he could have done something with, and I was kind of tired of trying to push demo tapes
mm-hmm.
and meet the right person after a concert
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
shake the right hand and whatever. So I'd gotten kind of a regular job, and I was managing housekeeping departments inside of hospitals and did that for a couple years, decided that wasn't what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And my wife and I had gotten married by that point, and we're living in California. Her father was wanting to get some more chicks back in the nest back in Iowa, and had some things going on with a family-owned business that provided opportunities for both of us. I went into building an ice cream company and started from a small product line with 5 flavors and spent 11 years building a fairly substantial ice cream company that ended up with hundreds of stocking units, different flavors, products under multiple brand names, and did that for about 11 years. I had a lot of fun. That was exciting, and I was able to express my creativity doing that. Instead of the music. But the music, doggone it, I still kept writing songs and I still had a desire. But, what's going to happen? You've left, you're not in Nashville and you're not even in Southern California. You're in Des Moines, Iowa, and this is not the epicenter of contemporary Christian music. And so that's not realistic. You've left all of your connections and all your producer friends and all your players. They're gone and have forgotten about you over the last, 11, 12 years. So what are you going to do? But felt God calling me to walk away from that very nice job where I had a lot of responsibility and a lot of benefits and good pay. One of my friends at church here and the pastor got together and conspired to ask me to leave that job to take a part-time job at church.
Really?
Running an evangelism initiative. That, sounds, you say, really, yeah, that's absolute stupidity. And from a financial perspective and from a career.
Maybe on paper.
Career perspective, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But not long before that, I'd kind of prayed a dangerous prayer and was convicted that my attitude toward lost people probably needed to change. And lost people to me were the them and the others, maybe the people who didn't get it. The people who were antagonistic to my values, they weren't, the first thing to my thought to my mind were people that Christ died for. And prayed a dangerous prayer that I was encouraged to pray once in our church, was convicted. It was when I needed to pray, and I asked God to break my heart for lost people. And obviously that was... That was an impactful prayer. And as I've said many times since that time, there are certain prayers that if you pray sincerely, God will answer, like 100% of the time.
And God did. God answered David's prayer and broke his heart for the lost. And once again, threw a curveball in David's career path. Part 2 of his story is coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. Thanks so much for listening. We believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story. You can find other chapters of Epic, learn more about our guests, and share your story with us at myfaithradio.com. Today, we are hearing David Bush's story. As a young man, he was full of dreams of a career as a recording artist. By his own admission, his plans were all about him. But God had a plan to transform his heart and his career path. Here is part two of his story.
Not long before that, I'd kind of prayed a dangerous prayer and was convicted that my attitude toward lost people probably needed to change. And I asked God to break my heart for lost people. And obviously that was an impactful prayer. And as I've said many times since that time, there are certain prayers that if you pray sincerely, God will answer, like, you know, 100% of the time. And so he changed my perspective toward lost people, and had been working on my my heart and kind of birthing a different desire. You know, as much as I wanted to be the king of the ice cream hill, I started thinking about things that maybe God was more interested in than that. Not that that isn't important. I was providing jobs for people. I was having opportunities to share in my job. And I tried to do so. And I believe he used that in some really cool ways. But when these two guys said, hey, we've got a deal for you. Why don't you quit your job and work part-time for the church? I was actually in a posture spiritually to say, yeah, I think I'll think about that. That sounds like something I might want to do. So that launched several years of building an evangelism toward Gen X aged people who had kind of decided church wasn't for them. They had different assumptions and didn't grow up with a biblical worldview, and you kind of had to start back at square one. You know, this is a Bible. Mm-hmm. This is a guy named Jesus. Maybe you haven't heard much about him, but this is what he did for you. And because that wasn't a full-time thing, I had begun writing music again, and I had I'd written enough to have an album's worth of music. And so the church agreed that they would allow me to do this evangelism thing, but also see where this music thing would go.
Wow.
Now we're talking, you know, I'm 39 at that point. And you're in the radio business, and I will guarantee that none of the singles that you're getting from artists who would like to get played are from people who are 39 or probably 15 years close to that.
Not many.
Not many. Well, you'll get them, but the ones that get aired are from a younger demographic.
Tend to be
a younger demographic.
Yeah.
And they basically aren't from Des Moines, Iowa. Anyway, I got in contact with some of my old friends back in California, and actually the person who I'd been longtime friends with was I introduced him to Fernando, and he ended up producing almost all of Fernando CDs, John Andrew Schreiner. And so I called him up and said, hey, you know, after all these years and all this stuff, I'm ready to do an album. And he was excited, and so we got busy doing that, and ended up, so I was ministering at the church, and I put out this first album. You know, only one problem, I didn't know anybody in radio, and there was only one radio station in central Iowa that would even really maybe play this. But they got excited that here was a quality product that they liked, and who was a local person, so they started airing it on the one station that we had. And it ended up, you know, getting on several of the songs. They played several songs, and they were some of the favorites that the station got in the response. And it was kind of crazy because I would give a concert at my church, and you'd have 1,200 people paying tickets.
Wow.
To come see it. They thought I would, you know, where's the tour bus? You know, isn't this guy coming from Nashville, right? And it's like, oh, no, this is you know, old Dave. You know, what? You mean the guy with the ice cream thing? You know? Well, get out, you know? It wasn't your normal deal, but I started getting opportunities to play outside of the state, around the state, sharing the stage with artists who were much bigger and notable than me. That led to a second album, it led to a third album, it led to a fourth album, and ended up charting songs on my own account and doing duets with Scott Crepane and Michael O'Brien, and doing songs that Fernando ended up coming and singing on, and getting a chance to go around the country visiting with dozens and dozens of radio stations that played my music and given concerts that arose out of those opportunities. And that is something that I would never would have guessed.
Yeah.
You know, this had to happen, man. If it didn't happen by the time I'm 18, 19, 20 at the latest, you know, it's over. Because that's just the way the world tends to work.
Mm-hmm.
God had something different in mind. And at the age of 39 through the age of nearly 50, I was doing concerts and charting songs on the radio and traveling around the country and, leading worship at a large church. And God put that together, raised the money to do it. And his timing, that wasn't my timing, was a fascinating thing. And my ability to actually minister and write from a more mature perspective and hopefully make it not all about David Bush, but make it about Jesus and being able to share the gospel coherently, biblically, while I did those concerts, because of the training I'd had and the what I'd had in the church with this evangelism initiative,
mm-hmm.
where I was regularly sharing my faith and mm-hmm. my testimony and learning how to do that effectively. God used all that in a strange time, in kind of out of a strange place. That led into pastoral work as a worship pastor and most recently as an associate pastor at a local church. And
it is not at all, if you were going to, like, just on paper chart a career,
mm-hmm.
a career path, it's almost like God wadded it up and threw it out and said,
yes,
this, we're going to do this my way.
Yeah, none of this makes sense. It doesn't make sense in the industry. It doesn't make sense even in ministry terms. But I think in God's perspective, obviously, it made a lot of sense. But going back to the beginning of our conversation, could he have done something earlier? Well, maybe, but he had to change me to make me usable. I had a lot of, you know, bluster. Maybe I had some raw talent. Maybe I had a lot of ambition. But he wasn't so concerned about the ambition or even the raw talent or even the connections I had. Those could wait because there was something more important he was working on, even more important than the impact on the kingdom I could have.
Mm.
You know, God cared more about me. He was more concerned that I become transformed into the image of Christ than using me, leveraging me and my talent or skills or whatever for the good of the kingdom, and having me, like I've seen happen many, many times, kind of spent shells of people exiting music ministry after one album, after two albums maybe, and being disillusioned, angry, bitter, wondering what was that all about, and not having a very good experience in all of that. He saved me from that. And I would have gladly plunged headlong mm-hmm. into that. I mean, I gladly would have, in my ignorance or in my pride or in my ambition or in my yeah. own agenda.
Yeah.
I would have gladly pursued that. But he cared enough for me to spare me that and allowed me to do this for far longer with far more recordings, with far more really cool-centered people, for more gospel-centric ministry than I could have planned for myself. That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
To know that he would keep pumping the brakes, keep taking away the opportunities, even while my spirit was vexed within me at what a poor job he was doing of managing my life at times, and allowing me to have a wife, four boys, be able to homeschool our kids, be able to have an intact family, be able to have them graduate from college and get involved in ministry and pursue God's designed for their life, and to come through that gauntlet with all that stuff intact. I recognize at this point in life, that's no gimme. That doesn't happen all the time. And so, you know, what an extraordinary opportunity I got that was not my timing, not the way I'd do it, not anything on my plan, but God had a better plan. I'm grateful that his plan worked out rather than mine, because there could have been a lot of tears, a lot of sorrow, a lot of bitterness if my plan would have worked out. And I'm sure there would have been way too much of me involved in all of it.
Now God has David heading in even yet another direction in his career. He's given him a passion to see health and wellness in the church. He's written a book called Fit for the King. He helps organize the Inspire Health Conferences. It's all about how we can make choices to help us remain vital and actively pursuing God's purposes into our later years. You can learn more at inspireforhealth.com. Big thanks to David for sharing his story today. And thanks to the team that makes Epic possible. Ted Ross and Jason Rackow for help with production. Stephen Johnson wrote our theme song. And I'm your host, Meredith Foster. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.